You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Fosma Moon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 552 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined today by the Honorable Seth Miller.
Uh-oh. Somebody got to behave now?
Yeah, that's the point of doing that.
I haven't said it right. How you doing?
I'm good. How about yourself?
Not too shabby.
There's some news about Delta and Aeromexico, and that.
Yeah. So I apologize to our Patreon listeners, especially we're a day late on this one because, JetBlue apologizes to you if they knew. My flight home yesterday was delayed 3 hours. So,
totally fun.
Yeah, it was great. I will say, I will get into this just briefly. We pushed back at LAX 6 a.m. Everything's on time. It's brutally early. Also, we mentioned this in prior conversations about getting sandwiches to go for the flight. Grimaldi's, the deli that we love, it closed on weekends. That did not work.
On the weekend? What?
Apparently, it catered to like businesses and stuff around there, not to passengers. So, anyway, they're closed on the weekends. So, by God, take out Thai for dinner the night before. So, it was fine. So, had meals. But get on board and push back. We start taxiing. We're going out to the 24s. No, 24s on the north side, the 25s, the south side. And we get like 80% of the way, and all of a sudden he makes a left turn and pulls off the taxiway. I'm like, oh, bleep. I did not bleep myself on board, but yeah, not good. Announces, we got to check the computers, got to go back to gate, check the computers there. Everybody off, we're taking this plane out of service. They decided to, and in the meantime, while we're sitting on the plane, I rebooked a new seat on the 9 o'clock flight because I don't trust that JetBlue would. Well, there weren't that many available, and I was hopeful that I would be able to convince them to refund the new booking, but let me keep the seat.
Yeah,
for the fare I'd already paid, right? Like, I just want to block myself space. Yeah. And didn't trust them to protect me without canceling and rebooking and or even be able to get through to anybody, honestly. Get an alert to go to a different gate, walk over to that gate and look at the board, and it was the 9 o'clock departure on the board. I'm like, and then I went back and did some other sleuthing of like, where's this plane coming from stuff. And it's like, oh, they stole the plane from the 9 o'clock for the 6 o'clock. And about 15 minutes later, the 9 o'clock posted a 90-minute delay to 10:20 or 80-minute delay to 10:20. I should check when that actually got out. Waiting for an inbound to show up. They started shuffling things impressive. So we were 3 hours late. I think part of the reason for that and not making us wait even longer was concerned about the pilots timing out.
Yeah.
But
so you guys basically left at the same time as the 9 a.m. would have left.
Right. We became the 9 a.m. flight, but all those passengers were stuck sometime later. So anyways, that's the short version or the long version of saying I got home too late last night to record. But as a bonus, we get breaking news on Monday, which is that the Delta Aeromexico JV final order was issued by Secretary Duffy. I do think it's interesting that he's actually listed as the signatory on it, not like an underling, that the final decision has been made now. The department terminates approval of the joint venture. And associated grant of antitrust immunity. This termination is effective as of January 1st, 2026. I expect there'll be a lawsuit, but yeah.
What do you make of this? Because I mean, we've talked about it previously. It's kind of unheard of for them to kill a JV.
It is, reading through the document, and I really had time to skim it because I had to run out this afternoon. But one of the interesting things I saw was basically in the materials, they basically said Delta and Aeromexico submitted all this information about the financials of why it's important to keep the joint venture. And then my cousin Vinny'd it, sort of everything that guy said is BS. Thank you. They dismissed most of it out of hand. They're like, we think that there are exaggerations in this section. We don't think all the routes are going to get cut. We don't think all the flights are going to get cut. If they do get to keep them, we have concerns, especially with the way the Mexican government is operating these days, that like routes out of Cancun, which is quickly becoming a congested airport, would all be for, you know, if they start to limit operations there and especially push people to the new
Tulum airport,
that they would start to pick, they would force all the other airlines there even to serve Cancun. Like all those sort of similar things seem to be implied there. So yeah, good times.
I mean, do you think there's like any legitimacy to that? Or do you think that the administration just didn't want this to happen? I mean,
It's hard for me to believe that the administration is so weirdly biased against Delta Aeromexico versus other airlines. Now, I can believe that the administration is very biased against Mexico.
Yeah.
And sees this as a way to stick it to Mexico, the country, and which is also kind of weird because Air Mexico isn't owned by the government.
Yeah, it's not a state carrier.
Not a state carrier. Mexicana is. And this doesn't really help Mexicana anyway, I can tell. So, yeah.
Weird. It's weird.
Yeah. But to answer your question, your original question, I cannot think of another scenario where a JBATI has been forcibly dissolved rather than mitigated with compromises and additional concessions.
Yeah.
At renewal.
Do you think, I mean, we've heard that like Alaska would like to get in on JV, you know, XYZ, the BA one, AA, or the JAL one.
JAL one, AA, right.
Do you think they're looking at this saying we should probably just wait?
Well, you know, to tease a bit from our bonus conversation, it depends on what the trade deficit is, right? And yep. In a lot of ways, it really does. It depends on where those imbalances are and what countries would be included.
Yeah.
And I still haven't actually found the good data on that United stuff for the bonus topics, but it's a weird one.
Yeah, we'll stick in. Patreon subscribers will get that. JetBlue at Fort Lauderdale, what is happening with them?
They've announced a bunch of new routes, mostly international. And golly gosh, if it doesn't seem like a great way to go after Spirit.
So I got to wonder if Kirby and JetBlue CEO are just sitting in the background, you know, saying what could you do at Fort Lauderdale? Well, what could you do?
I mean, so Pittsburgh and New Orleans are new and domestic. St. Martin, Aruba, Cartagena, Cali, Liberia, Costa Rica, San Pedro Sula, and Grand Cayman.
Wow. Okay.
All to start in November. And then additional flying, I think they had previously announced Atlanta, Hartford, Boston, San Juan, Cancun, Kingston, Jamaica, Punta Cana, San Jose, Costa Rica, and Santiago, DR.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. So most of the international, the domestic stuff boosts in November. The international stuff doesn't really come on until the beginning of December. And it is interesting to hear, you know, again, Kirby said, when we talked about this last week, they announced Columbia and Chattanooga
from Newark.
And with kind of a shit eating grin on his face and a smirk, he was like, I mean, we waited till January. We figured that's when they'd finally be done flying. So yeah. But I haven't confirmed that Spirit flies all these same routes, but I would not be surprised to learn that.
And then what's Breeze doing on some Spirit routes? Are they trying to get in on the same thing?
I want to say they did Myrtle to Orlando announced, which is
yeah.
Random one, but like it's not nearly as much as what JetBlue is doing. But I think basically everybody is going after Spirit's sort of more profitable or seemingly potentially profitable operations.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, right. It's sort of the same thing that Breeze did after going after Avelo out west.
Yep. Just picking up the ones that performed well.
Yeah. They're picking up the good slop. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't want to phrase it.
And then, yeah, a note in here about Lufthansa Group centralizing more. And I had a question kind of about some stuff that's going on.
Yeah. So I'm just looking, I just pulled up schedules real quick. So looking right now, just for this month,
yep.
Aruba, Cartagena, Cancun, Fort Lauderdale, Kingston, Punta Cana, almost all the routes that they announced are served by Spirit, mostly daily. St. Martin and Aruba are not, but the others are. And looks like Liberia, Costa Rica will be new. That's not one that Spirit is operating, at least not this month. But everything else is sort of, and they're mostly year-round.
Wow.
So some of them, they're actually interesting, like, Kingston, Jamaica is 2 to 3 times a day, but 5 to 6x daily peak. They're going to be a massive growth there.
Wild.
Yeah.
Is there really that much demand from Florida to the Caribbean?
Yeah.
And
depending on the market, it's truly a blend of vacation and VFR, visiting friends and relatives, right? Kingston is very much a VFR traffic route.
Yeah.
Right. Montego Bay is the vacation stuff, and that's not listed here. So
yeah.
I don't know if it already exists or not, but anyway.
Interesting. So tell me about Lufthansa Group and centralization.
Yeah, this was an interesting one that came out. They're going to further consolidate route planning to a group function. So right now, long-haul routes are all the long-haul routes are centrally planned amongst the big network carriers. So Lufthansa, Swiss, Austrian, and Brussels. Wide body operators. Well, I mean, Discover, I guess, sort of has wide bodies, but whatever. Does have wide bodies. Anyway, they're now going to coordinate short haul operations and short and medium haul route planning as well, which only makes sense in, you know, completely makes sense in the fact, in the sense that all the long haul stuff is built not just on O&D, but also connecting flow. So you need to have those flow correctly. And sometimes you don't need, you know, you might say that Bologna, Italy is going to flow via Munich, not via Munich and Zurich.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Something like that. I'm just making up city names here, but or routes, but I don't know where they actually fly, but things like that. And especially now, ITA was not mentioned in there, but there was also, I think, a story out last week about them trying to get up to their 90% ownership from the current, or 51 or 40 or whatever it is. So definitely trying to take it over. So this is
the reason it's interesting to me is they essentially planning long haul routes and short haul routes for that matter.
Sure.
Like they could technically build like super hubs, right? If they really wanted to, where we don't put anything via Austria or via Vienna, right?
Yeah.
Let's stop flying long haul out of Vienna and let's focus on putting all that traffic through Zurich, for example, or Munich. Okay. What's the driver? Is it just to appease local traffic? And like, it seems like somewhat inefficient, right? Like you got Munich and Vienna operating out of, you know, these two airports that are, for all intents and purposes, very close together.
Sure.
Isn't there some efficiency to be gained there, or is there not?
In terms of consolidating and like closing one of the long haul hubs?
Yeah, or just, you know, maybe they have like a very few focused routes that are long haul for Austrian traffic. You know,
yeah. I mean, to be fair, Stephen, Frankfurt is 35 miles closer than Vienna to Munich.
Okay. Fair enough.
186 to 221, if I think I did that math right.
Well, and all the A380s went to Munich, so.
Yeah. You know, and looking at the map, Geneva and Zurich are right in the middle. And Brussels is actually the furthest afield, as it were. I see what you're saying. And, you know, we often poo-poo in the United States the idea of Dulles and Newark as hubs for the same airline, or Philadelphia and JFK.
Yep.
Which is actually proving to be terrible for American, but, or not terrible, but weirdly complicated. In terms of where to put connecting flow. And right. And so the American example, actually the United one, both are where they can, they put mostly connecting flow through the secondary hubs.
Yep.
Get O&D from the big, from the bigger cities. But there are some markets where, you know, they need to fill secondary traffic, and they will, in the case of United, at least they think there's, you know, a half plane worth of local traffic, but they'll actually run connections to feed that. Whereas, you know, if you're going, Brussels is a good example, they would rather, you know, from the East Coast, they would rather route you through Dulles to get to Brussels.
Yep.
But if you're going to one of these smaller, you know, Palma de Mallorca or whatever, one of those random small markets, smaller-ish markets they run, that's only out of Newark, they only run out of Newark because it's just not big enough. And there's like one or two, I feel like, that they serve out of Dulles, but not Newark.
Mm.
Like Accra, maybe?
Accra, yeah. Is yeah, Lagos.
Right, and for reasons, but I feel like those are ones where, you know, there just isn't the local demand out of New York. But, you know, so I do think it makes sense to keep long haul bases everywhere. I do think, though, that we might see some selective routing of where some of that traffic goes, especially the connecting stuff. And it's not to say like you won't be able to get from Bologna to all the hubs or wherever they all fly, but you might not have it timed for the transatlantic banks to all of them.
Gotcha. Yeah. Makes sense. Which leads me to a follow-up question. The Swiss is getting their A350s.
Okay.
And I'm wondering, how are they choosing to start with Boston? What's the driver there? That seems odd to me.
Lobster?
I guess. It's a weird route.
I think it's a route they fly anyways. They have all, you know, it's been there year-round forever. And you can do it out and back with plenty of padding time in case things start to go sideways.
So it's close enough to Europe. You're not going to lose a crew with a 2-hour mechanical or learning delay. It's going to be a, okay.
And you can, right? Like, I'm going to have to check the flight times, but I'm guessing it's like 9.5 westbound and 7.5 or 8 eastbound.
Maybe it might be shorter than that. It might be like 7 eastbound.
I'm just guessing and, you know, making numbers up here, but Boston to Zurich.
Yep.
So I think that's a big part of it, though.
Yeah, that makes sense. I just was, I mean, it looks like a really sweet plane.
Well, I'll let you know.
Yeah. Are you taking it?
I don't know, 7:15 eastbound and 8:30 back.
I was right. Dang.
Yeah. Look at you.
Yeah. And so also, you know, current construction bits notwithstanding, Boston is a relatively reliable airport. A lot of runways for what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
There is construction going on right now that's screwing things up on the regular. But
yeah, because I guess their only other options will be Chicago, Newark, or JFK, Dulles. That would be maybe Miami would be the other one. So
I mean, when does it start? In the winter season?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So
I'm guessing they want to use the 777s to Miami. So yeah. Let's talk about Boeing and Alaska.
Yeah. Boston, Newark, Dulles, JFK, Los Angeles, Miami, O'Hare, San Francisco. So yeah, you want to go northeast. So it's Dulles, Boston, Newark, JFK.
Yep. Yep.
And your plane will get stuck at Newark or JFK real easy versus Dulles or Boston for an easy turn.
Exactly. Yep.
So,
Boeing fine. They're getting a fine for the Alaska plug blowout
for misleading Boeing certification engineers.
Okay.
So basically not lying to them, but misleading them.
Okay.
We basically pled it down to like BS. Not even a slap on the wrist.
I mean, $3 million. That's...
Their revenue last year was $66
billion. So it's a rounding. It's a decimal.
Someone said, I think it was like 13 minutes of revenue.
They sat in the corner for 13 minutes.
Yeah. No, it's... I think I wrote online, the government has made it far too cheap to endanger and to kill people.
Yeah. 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 Wow.
You know, there's always the old saying, a fine is a price. And, you know, I do think people should have been held criminally liable for certainly the Max situation. This one I'm not as sure about the data on, but, you know, a fine is a price. Okay. But like, then make it a real price at least.
Yeah. 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 I'm sure there's actuarial data that the airlines keep internally, but I'm guessing they don't have to expose that values a life somewhere.
Sure. I mean, insurance companies certainly do.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I mean, it's interesting that that's not used as the basis for some of the stuff, but anyway.
Yeah.
Avello got some funding and they're going to buy some E2s.
Yeah. Yes.
Did not see this coming.
So it was a very purposefully vague press release that it's a largest funding round ever and from a new investor, but did not name the amount of money nor the investor. So that's cool. They announced that was day one, and then I think it was a Monday, and then Tuesday they announced an order for 50 E195 E2s and 50 options. Excuse me. And best story, best data out there, and John Ostrower over at Air Current reported this, is basically that Embraer gave them the money to make the PDP, the initial sort of order signing payments. And so, like, Ember basically moved the money from one pocket to another via Avello. They've wanted to get the E2s into North America or into the United States. Porter has them. The only way to get them into the United States is with as a mainline or with an airline that doesn't have a scope clause. Andrew Levy has dubbed it Avello 2.0. I really need to go back and find my interview with him where I asked him about buying new airplanes, and he was keen on it. He still thought it was going to be 737s at the time. But it was sort of a, once we get things, working, then maybe we'll see about that.
Yeah.
You know, they clearly don't have things working, so I'm not sure, what's up there.
I mean, the reason I'm struck by this is, It's a lot of planes.
Mm-hmm.
They've been struggling. I guess you take free planes and you figure out what to do with them later.
Yeah.
And does this get rid of the 737s?
So I actually found my transcript here. It's, you know, terrible. Not terrible. It's odd. So who knows? But I'm skimming through it here. You know, these airplanes have 15 more years of life. And then what do we do in 15 years? Maybe it just depends on other alternatives in the market. I like used aircraft for the most part. If you can offer the exact same product, the same economics, with the big exception of a lower purchase price, enables you to not have to fly the airplane 12 or 13 hours a day to make the numbers work. At some point, you get too big where you need the standardization of a new airplane. At some point, maybe we will get there. That's a long time down the road. And he said that in the inaugural Wilmington 2.5 years ago.
Mm.
I don't remember where we were flying to, but it was out of Wilmington. Wilmington, Delaware. So, you know, it's interesting to, you know, hear him now think that they've actually solved that problem only 5 years in. And, oh, by the way, I mean, he'll say 4 years in, because end of 27, 4.5 years. And he thinks, like, they've solved all their problems, and, you know, he'll probably claim that they're making money. But they did say that these planes would be used for commercial service. They don't expect them to go to more deportation flights.
Yep.
I mean, maybe they take all the 737s and move them over to that side because they're so cheap to operate, and it lines up with how everybody else runs deportation flights. And they drop there. In some ways, this is, and I talked with Dave Neilman over Breeze. He was at Expo last week, Apex Expo out in California. And he spoke both on stage, and I spoke with him a little bit afterwards. I got, you know, my 10 minutes of time. And he basically said he believes that competing against a Spirit and a Frontier and even the Legacies with that 120 to 140 seat plane is very much a sweet spot. And right now, Avella's running the 155 to 175 seat planes.
So they want something slightly smaller.
They want something just that little bit smaller. And you can't get an A220. You can't get it on the A220s for a long time right now.
Yeah.
And Embraer is desperate to get into the U.S. market. So they presume, you know, like I said, financed them and probably gave them a pretty good deal on top of that.
Yep. And Brett Snyder, Cranky Flyer, had an article out as well. And he's talking about potentially using these on short runways, 4,000 to 5,000 foot runways, and what kind of market that opens up for Avello itself on the East Coast specifically.
Yeah, that's interesting. I would wonder, because I would think the 73Gs would have been able to do similar performance, but maybe not. Maybe this is even better.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean,
I think they did mention they're going to take the like short field performance package on them.
Yeah, I mean, but some of these airports, like, and Brett points this out, he says they're not Part 139 airports, so they're not commercial airports today for, you know, airline service, scheduled passenger service. So they would need to be, they would have to do some actual enablement to make it happen. Maybe that's what they're looking at. Something, you know, I can't even think of an example that would have a short runway. Bridgeport, maybe. I think that's what.
Is Bridgeport came up again?
Bridgeport, Connecticut. Man, I don't know why he's so hung up on that.
I'm now trying to skim the story too. Bridgeport was rumored as the launch for either them or Breeze. I don't remember which, way back in the day. And we had one of our dispatcher friends talk about it. He's like, basically the same thing. Like, you can't do it there because it's not set up to operate for that. Among other things, they need, like, ARF, the firefighting situation isn't there.
Yeah.
But also, like, why would you move from New Haven to Bridgeport?
I mean, that's what
I was from New York City, but, like, does that help? Like, a little closer to Stanford?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, that's just what Brett was pointing out.
I think that's close to New Haven, but whatever.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it could open up, you know, it could be one of these things where Avello sees a market where, hey, we'll come in and we'll fund one of these smaller airports outside of a major metropolitan area and put these planes there. Tyler, Texas comes back, makes a comeback, you know.
Sweet.
Let's see. What else do we got? Fume events. So I put this story in the show notes, because it's been posted around. It's a Wall Street Journal article about these events that are happening on planes where people feel sick or there's a certain smell. People say it smells like old shoes or something. It's very off. It's an off-putting smell. It's not like aviation fumes, like avgas fumes. And what's concerning is that the manufacturers, specifically the engine manufacturers and the bleed air system manufacturers, know what the problem is.
Well, and so, I mean, yes, probably, right? The bleed air thing is not new. I'd have to go back and search. I think we've talked about it before, like, but it's been years. We've also been doing this for more than a decade, so we've basically talked about everything.
Yeah.
But, right, like, I know we've talked about it before. I know it's come up before. The interesting thing about it to me is, at the time, it was, you know, people were raising it as an issue, but it was a very infrequent event. Certainly there was some significance about it, but it seemed to be very infrequent, and even when it happened, relatively mild. In the past few years, on the A320 family especially, Airbus basically changed the rules about what was required if it happened for inspection and remediation before return to service. And the problem is basically that the way air gets into the cabin on basically everything but a 787 flows in through the compressor to be pushed out the back to provide thrust. Some of that warm air is bled off and pulled out of the compressor, out of the engine, and into the HVAC system on the airplane. And the issue is basically that the seal on some of the oil filters or O-rings or something breaks down. And so instead of getting pure air, you get air blended with atomized oil or burning of smoke from the burning of the oil or anything like that.
Yeah, any kind of leakage into the engine.
Yeah.
Where the oil is, you know, either catching fire or sizzling or doing whatever, is being caught in the bleed air system and being pumped into the cabin. And it can't be filtered out. It's very fine particles. So it's making it in no matter what. But that's a problem. I don't know. That's a big problem to solve, to me at least. Like, it's a redesign of engines and how HVAC systems work.
It's a redesign or not. Or, you know, putting back the old rules that say, hey, when the filter starts to fail and the O-rings break down, you actually have to replace them. Maybe you have to proactively replace them before that more aggressively. Like, you won't eliminate them per se, short of going to a 787 type system, which does not pull the bleed air through the engine. I think Airbus is on a newer design on newer planes going forward, is going to move the intake up to above the, an intake sort of above the aircraft instead of below.
Yep.
That will minimize some of that flow, and some of the like exhaust being brought in, so that they are making some changes. There's also the perennial, hey, we shouldn't talk about this because people realize how bad we are, you know, how bad the original is kind of thing. And so we shouldn't make any changes, like problem of recognizing you're doing something terrible and still not fixing it because you don't want to get caught for the original terrible, which is, reuse the word a fourth time in the sentence, terrible way to approach life. But here we are.
Well, in the Wall Street Journal, is the Washington Post or the Wall Street Journal?
Wall Street Journal.
They pointed out another piece of this that I found concerning, I guess is a good word,
yeah.
that the reports of these incidents have gone up, and it's unclear to them from the data. Like, they can't tell if it's because they've been told, like airlines have been told to report more frequently, or it's actually happening more frequently and we've missed it in the past. Like, it's hard to deduce what's going on there.
Yeah.
It's bad that it's going up.
Are passengers misbehaving more, or do we just see it because everybody's got a camera in their hand?
It's the question of our time.
The data suggests they are actually misbehaving more, but they're also terrible people. So
yeah. And then last
passengers, but yeah, anyway.
Also more passengers, yes. Lastly, Indigo and Aegean have started a code share or are gonna start a code share.
They announced it. This builds on Indigo is gonna start service to Athens later this year. Aegean has plans using the previously JetBlue 321LRs that it acquired. They get one, I think, end of this year, one early next year, which will enter service in March and May, respectively. Or Delhi starts in March and Mumbai starts in May. So, and it's like 5 or 6 times a week for Delhi and 3 for Mumbai. So, this is basically a gathering feed at both ends for both airlines.
Hmm.
It'll be interesting to see because I think, I don't know where the Indigo service to Athens is coming from. I would assume Delhi.
Yeah.
Let's see if I can find it real quick. So that would be a lot of service from Delhi, all of a sudden, but maybe it's in January. Sorry. Clicking as fast as I can. Or it's not for sale yet. They've definitely announced that they're going to do it. So yeah, I don't see it filed yet. And they haven't helped it. So. Yeah,
wow. Good time. I mean, it's good news for everybody, right? Like, you want to, you know, connect and stuff on Aegean.
Yeah, I mean, right, Aegean has become the sort of de facto for everybody in and out of India, unless you're really, really, really trying to get in with Air India for some political reasons. But, like, even United for a long time, its Star Alliance partner, was still using Indigo as its onward carrier of choice. So,
good times. All right. Anything else you want to chat about before we kick over to the bonus topics?
No, I think that covers it.
Cool. Well, thank you for listening to this week's episode. If you're a Patreon subscriber, we're going to talk about Kirby's comments at Expo, what Seth heard when he was there, Air Canada's 2026 expansion plans, Korean and premium Y conversion stoppage, and then other things that Seth encountered, including Dorkfest and a Waymo ride.
Yeah.
This I want to know about. So stick around for that if you're a patron.
Future is here, my friend. And it's a little herky-jerky on the roads, honestly.
So, yeah. If you're not a Patreon subscriber, thanks for listening. We appreciate it. And we will talk to you next time. Happy travels.
Take care.